Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Okay, we're joined by a great friend, a special guest. We've had him on before. We've seen him speak. And you guys have been waiting for this to hear the updates. Last year, we aired on episode 1716, which was on April 24th, an interview, a special presentation with a representative from the organization in South Africa called Sightlanders, spelled Suidlanders. It looks like Suidlanders, but it's pronounced Sightlanders. This is a group of Christian patriots who love their country in South Africa. They are, incidentally, a white group of it is a organization made up of white citizens who are pleading for the UN for help because they've been targeted for genocide. This is kind of an interesting situation that we've seen develop, much like what we saw in Zimbabwe and so on. So I don't want to steal too much thunder from Simon, but just wanted to remind you, if you have not, please go back and listen to episode 1716 on Radio Free Redoubt. We also have some updates that we put out just on March 9th of this year, so just a few weeks ago. But what we want to do is have Simon Roche just review kind of who they are for those of you that are new listeners, and then bring us up to speed on what's happened over the last year and where we are now and where this civil defense preparedness organization is now in their emergency planning in anticipation of this coming civil war and genocide. So, Simon Roche, thank you so much for being with us here on Radio Free Redoubt.
No, thank you very much, John Jacob, for having us. We desperately need the exposure of what's occurring in South Africa, and we're grateful for people like you who are willing to host us.
Well, this is something, of course, you're in our prayers. There was one thing I wanted to run by you just to ask, because I've had a couple people ask, and we'll get into the other stuff. This guy, Jared Taylor, I'm not sure who he is. I guess he's some white nationalist, white identity guy. But a couple people said, hey, I saw that Sightlanders is going to be with Jared Taylor, or interviewed by Jared Taylor, or on his show, or going to meet him or something. Is that old, or can you speak to that at all?
Yes, certainly I can. I know that it's...
I just don't know what to tell him.
Yes. I know that it's a very dicey thing from your guys' point of view. He is a white nationalist. I would not describe him as a white supremacist. I've dealt with him, and he is the most polite, gentle, sweet-natured man who just is one of those people who has a conviction that a certain culture, a particular culture in the world, a particular set of values, a particular origin is under assault, and he's standing up for it. If you watch the interviews that are held in his house, you can see that he's very much fascinated by other cultures. He grew up in Japan, for example, as the son of missionaries. He's not a hater of other people, but because he has this white nationalist thing, because he's saying, listen, European folks, you're going to get destroyed. Everything's being corroded. You're being undermined unless you stand together. Now he's been painted as a sort of a Adolf Hitler. I know that it's a very politically incorrect thing to attend his conference. But to give you an idea, we got an opportunity to speak on David Duke's radio show, and we were guaranteed 1.5 million listeners by the time it's sent out all over the world. And we declined it flat out because David Duke is an out-and-out racist, end of story. But Jared Taylor is a different class of human being, although you wouldn't know it if you listen to the rhetoric.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of... Yeah, if you're not... Oh, I'm getting some feedback. If you're not denouncing your race, if you're of European descent, if you're not denouncing it, then you're a hater of all other races. That's kind of where we've come to. We've already addressed this, laid it to rest. It is by no means a white nationalist effort. It's not a racist organization. You know, I want to let you speak to that. So if you would, please kind of lay the foundation of what is Sightlanders and what is the political climate that's creating the impetus for you, creating a plan among this your demographic group in your country?
John Jacob, Sightlanders is a civil defense organization constituted under the provisions of international law, particularly but not only Protocols 1 and 2 additional to the Geneva Conventions, which make specific provisions for the conditions and circumstances of civilians in armed conflict. And those protocols deal extensively with identifiable ethnic groups. So if, for example, those protocols had existed during the Second World War, they would have, to some extent, hopefully, been able to protect Jews as Jews in the Warsaw ghettos and elsewhere. They would also have applied to Muslim Kosovars and Muslim Albanians in the Yugoslavian breakup, to Roman Catholic Croats, and to Eastern Orthodox Serbs in the Yugoslav breakup, and indeed to the Tutsis of Rwanda. And we, as white people in South Africa, who are presently very embattled, are the constituents of the Sightlanders organization as a civil defense organization. We are preparing for a civil war in our country. And right now, things are looking very, very dire. To cite one example, there are many, many, and we can perhaps cite some others during the course of the program, but I think that this is a good example to almost kick off with for those of your listeners who are unfamiliar with what we're talking about. On Monday the 30th of October last year, there was a spontaneous protest, very peaceful protest called Black Monday, that happened all across South Africa. And there were all race groups represented. It was mostly white people because, as you'll hear in a second, for the reason that you'll hear in a second. And it was very peaceful. It was to do with protesting the incredible rates of rape and murder on amongst, particularly against white farmers, on South African farms. And it went off peacefully. It was very well done. There was no stoning of buses, which is a typical phenomenon of protests in South Africa, or the burning of down of civil, of municipal buildings, which is very common, or the burning down of schools, or perhaps a rape or two of women in side alleys during protests. No single incident of violence or destruction occurred. But 3 days later, the Minister of Defense of the Republic of South Africa, Nosiviwe Mapisa Nkola, was interviewed on television, nationwide television, and she said that if such an event happens again, in other words, a peaceful protest against rape and murder, without violence, without any drama, across the country, it will cause a genocide of the white people of South Africa. A civil war will start and the whites will be genocided. That gives you some kind of an idea of the circumstances in which we're living. I'll cite one other statistic which may help my story to sound credible. At the moment, all across the USA, there are protests against the gun ownership. And the rate of murder of U.S. citizens is by guns is about 4.7 per 100,000. 4.7 per 100,000. The rate of murder of white South African farmers is 97 per 100,000. And that, by the way, is the most conservative estimate. There are a number of very serious, intelligent people, statisticians and others, who say that that rate overlooks this, and it overlooks that, and it overlooks the other, and that the correct rate is 133 per 100,000. So to give a sense of perspective, there is a murder rate occurring in South Africa, which is unheard of in the world, and therefore white people, because they are the overwhelmingly prevalent victims, are very, very perturbed. I think that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Very much. This is it's interesting. It's, you know, to draw a parallel, it would be as if the Black Lives Matter protested in Ferguson, you know, a black man being shot by the police, and then our federal government responding with, if that happens again, we're going to start killing all the blacks. That's absurd. It's absurd that the international community would go absolutely berserk if that kind of a statement was made against a minority race. And so there seems to be no international effort to respond to the overt threats against a minority race group in your country. And it's puzzling. Now, you said something earlier that I wanted to get clarification on. You said we are, in describing the organization Sightlanders, you said we are preparing for a civil war. Now, in all of my understanding of everything you stand for, you are not preparing for a civil war as an offensive measure. It's something that is being threatened against you that is coming anyway, whether you want it to or not, and that you are preparing to survive that, not as an offensive, but in a defensive posture. Would that be correct?
That's correct. The international laws in question make specific provision for identifiable ethnic groups to gather together and to create a defensive perimeter. So let's say, for example, God forbid, there was a persecution or a civil war in which, for argument's sake, the Mormons of the USA were targeted. The Mormons could gather together in a fixed location as an identifiable group, and they could say, right, here is our perimeter, please don't cross this line. If you do, we will defend this line under international law. However, you may not then make incursions into other people's territory. So we are not an offensive military organization. We don't stockpile ammunition and guns and TNT and cruise missiles and bazookas, what have you. If we did, we would have been caught a long time ago because we are saturated with spies, our organization.
I'm sure.
And they've tried by all means to catch us out, and we've never once been prosecuted because we simply do obey the law as a civil defense organization devoted to safeguarding the welfare of civilians under international law. So, and the long and the short of it is that we have to be a non-party to the conflict. We have to withdraw and confine ourselves to a certain area. We may, under international law, protect that the perimeter, the cordon of that area, but we may not go beyond it. We may not be an aggressor. We may not be a party to the conflict, as the law puts it.
Correct. That's my understanding. What's interesting, what's intriguing for us from a patriot preparedness perspective, and once again, I want to implore the listeners to go back and listen to episode 1716 and get a baseline, because there's a lot that was covered there. I know you came over here and spoke. You were on a speaking tour. I got a chance to spend some time with you and meet you and your traveling companion there. And it was just an eye-opener what you folks are up against. Now, we are not without division and strife and polarizing issues and even threats of hostility in our own country here in America. Although we're at least, well, I don't know, 5 to 7 to 10 years behind you. It depends on how quickly the communists want to escalate things. But there's evidence of a coming conflict in our own country. So the conservative, especially Christian conservative, patriot-minded people in this country are looking at that and trying to make provisions for their families and their communities for provisions and for security. And you guys have a very advanced emergency plan. So can you just introduce that a little bit to the listeners? There's so much good that can be learned from the, I guess, the trail that you guys have already blazed. So can you speak to your emergency plan that you have for your group?
Yes, I'd like to begin by saying that our emergency plan is being copied in South Africa by a certain group of Indian Muslims. One of our four core population groups in South Africa is Indian people who came to South Africa about 145 years ago, and about half of them, give or take, are Muslims. And that Muslim community is copying our plan. It's also being copied in Norway, Sweden, Austria, and there's one other country in Europe I've forgotten, and in three places in the USA. And that national emergency plan provides for civilian non-combatants to withdraw from conflict zones and to gather together. And the plan covers particularly the building of little groups or cells in various regions. Let's say, for example, that there was a cell in each of five towns in Washington State, for argument's sake. Now, each of those cells would then cooperate to build up preparations. And if a conflict began, that cell, what we would call a group, would then evacuate that area. They'd say, oh, dear me, it's not safe here anymore. It's going to be far safer if we go 100 miles eastwards. And then the other four cells, the four groups, would do the same thing. So little streams would become, the rivers would become raging torrents, as it were, of convoys of refugees heading towards a location where their numbers create a critical mass for defense. It is feasible, I don't say easy, we're not naive people and we're familiar with war and conflict in this country, but it is possible for 10 people to protect themselves against 100 if it's done well. Many of your listeners will be familiar with the Patriot series of books from which we take a lot of inspiration, but it's impossible for one
you're talking,
to defend himself against 10.
You're talking about James Rawls, the author James Rawls.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And yes, so the key is to get into common areas where there's critical mass for defensive purposes and where the people can help one another to create sustainable societies in conditions of conflict. For example, somebody has to take responsibility for hygiene and sewerage. Somebody has to take responsibility for water pumping with diesel-driven pumps and purification and reticulation and distribution. And the same with electricity, or if there's no electricity, the distribution of firewood, the ingathering of food, and so on and so forth. So if you have a large number of people with the aged, we make strong provision for the aged, women and children. Let's leave able-bodied men aside for a second. The aged, women, children, and the disabled. Then you have to focus on the civilization aspects, as it were, of a society. You can't live primitively indefinitely because people will get sick. So you need numbers of people to support one another in the disparate different aspects of life. And that's what our national emergency plan is all about. It's a comprehensive plan about preparation, radios, food, fuel, cars, routes, coordinates, convoys, camps, final destinations, ingathering of food, shelter, you name it, every single aspect that you can think of.
It does seem extremely comprehensive. It's very, very encouraging to see this. And for the audio, we are using, for the listeners, we're using an encrypted chat application for security. And then it's also just inherently not the highest quality of audio. So that's why we're getting some feedback. So if you just bear with us here in the listening audience, we're going to get through this. I want to talk about some of the different components of your preparedness. I also want to, address some of the, avoid some misconceptions. There's a reason why you're not talking a lot about guns and tactics and things like that. And so, I know people want to hear about that, and people are going to ask, oh, you should have asked them about, what type of defenses and weapons and things they have. But I want to address that. And there's a reason why we're not talking about that a whole lot. So we do have to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're with Simon Roche from Sightlanders, who is in South Africa right now working on the final stages of a plan for civil defense to protect those who have been targeted for future, some would say, imminent genocide in their country. And we can learn a lot from them in a country that's being torn apart right now. So we'll be back in just a moment. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there. Okay, if you are just joining us late, we are talking with Simon Roche, who is in South Africa right now. He was in the United States last year with a partner trying to raise awareness and ask for support, mostly logistical support, funding for logistical support for a nationwide emergency plan for a group that has been targeted for genocide and threatened with genocide. So, Simon, thank you for being with us here at Radio Free Redoubt.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so we're talking about the emergency plan. I know right before the break, we mentioned guns. People like to talk about guns, tactics, firearms, weapons. What do they have? What do they... Now, briefly, I just wanted to address this. Right now, the current administration is looking for a reason to demonize Sightlanders or any group like it. So they're looking for a reason to say, these guys are insurrectionists, so we want to stay away from that. They have the inherent right, the God-given right to self-defense. And in fact, the legal right under international law, when they're being targeted for extermination, to gather together, to plea for help from the international community and to defend themselves until that help arrives. So what can you speak to in terms of self-defense?
The international law makes provision for a perimeter to be defended with light arms only. And many people in the USA said to us, well, that's absolutely absurd. If you're going to depend upon that, well, then you might as well write yourselves off. You're a bunch of fools. But the reality is, John Jacob, that we don't have much choice. We're already being killed at a rate that's higher than anything you can imagine. I have previously divulged statistics which were composed by an American guy, a mechanical engineer in Salina, magnificent statistics of what is happening in South Africa. Those have since been corroborated or validated independently. And let me provide one which is not terribly politically correct, but just gives a sense of perspective. The chances of a white South African being murdered by a black man are 13,700% higher than any American being murdered. And they are 24,900% higher than the chances of a white American being murdered by a black person. The point that I'm trying to make is that until people understand the fundamental arithmetic of this, until people understand that the rape of babies on farms is an actual reality that is affecting all of us,
yeah,
they won't really appreciate whether we're the good guys or the bad guys. Maybe they're trying to cause trouble. Maybe they're a bunch of neo-Nazis. We're not at all. My first child is a quarter Vietnamese, and I have never had a moment's kind of shame about that. This is not a race-based thing. It has been made a race-based thing.
Yeah,
it so happens that this is a specifically targeted community with it has no like in the whole world. There's just no comparison to us. Nobody is being persecuted like we are in outside of times of war. And that is not just a claim. That has
Oh, you broke up there. Oh, we lost you there, Simon. You broke up. All right. Sorry about that. We lost the connection. We are on an encrypted application chat and phone messaging system that is, of course, you know, we're talking from the United States around the world to South Africa, where Simon Roche is in a very remote location, very difficult logistically as far as phones and internet goes. So hopefully we can keep our connection together. So what we'll do is just we'll just continue on here. Simon, I know that you're very acutely aware of world events, current events throughout the world, the socio-political developments and so on. In the United States right now, we have a increasing division, very polarizing issues regarding firearms ownership and, of course, just a lot of strife, left versus right, and globalists versus nationalists, conservatives versus liberals, and so on. I know you're experiencing that type of division, which is where it eventually goes. If not dealt with, it comes to a head, and that's where things are, you know, with you guys there. In this ongoing gun debate that we have in the United States, let's talk about your situation there. Do you feel that the people in your group are adequately armed to be able to provide for their defense?
No, we're not. And we're well aware that we're not well enough armed to defend our people, as I described to you earlier, under international law. But I will say that your listeners should perhaps bear in mind that we have a very proud tradition of combat under difficult circumstances. You know, in the Great Boer War of 1899 to 1902, something between 45,000 and the highest estimate that exists is 60,000. Boers took on 450,000, almost exactly 450,000 British, of whom 220,000 were in the field at any one time. The point being that we can handle ourselves. We've been through rough times in the past, and we just keep our faith in the Lord. You know, we're not good examples of Christians. We're not the people in the world of the caliber, the Christian caliber of the Amish and other people who live God-fearing lives from sunup to sundown every day of their lives. We're a rough diamond people, and we're famous as a rough diamond people, but we are also renowned for, rough diamond or not, having a very strong faith. You know, the system of apartheid was in fact known here as Christian nationalism. In other words, the word apartheid was not the official policy of the government. That was an aspect of it that became the name for the system. But the name was Christian nationalism. We were the only country in the whole wide world that first and foremost identified ourselves as Christians. That was our system, our way, our policy, our philosophy. So we put our faith in Almighty God. We always do. We're a God-fearing organization. We're a God-fearing people. And he, in the end, will do right by us. We could have all the guns in the world and still fail.
Yeah.
But with the Lord on our side, we could have just catapults and slingshots and succeed.
Well, now, the battle belongs to the Lord. You know, the scripture says, some place their trust in horses, some place their trust in chariots, and we trust in the Lord. So,
well, you know, for other people it might sound terribly naive, but without going on and on and on about this topic for too long, the reality is our perspective is different to those people in the Northern Hemisphere, be they Americans or Canadians or British or French or Germans, who contact us and say, oh, you're so silly, you should go about it a different way. But this is the way we went about the Boer War. This is the way we went about Blood River, which is unique in the annals of warfare.
Yes.
Where something like 30,000 Zulus, it was 40 Zulu regiments of 900 men, that means 36,000, marched against 464 men who had one little cannon, a ship's saluting cannon, 464 versus something like 30, 35, 36,000 who had spears, and they had also modern rifles, because they traded for them with various unscrupulous traders.
Yeah.
And not one single one person was died of the 464 Boers at Blood River. There is no comparable example in the whole world. Nothing that comes close to that example. So we ask people to forgive us and to be patient with us and to bear with us if we have strange ways, but these are our ways.
Yeah. Well, especially in a world where we're always being told to respect the other's culture. That's your culture. So I think I can respect that. Let me ask you before we move off this topic, though. A couple people have asked, what is the AR-15 is kind of the American rifle, the American combat rifle. What's the predominantly South African rifle that your folks carry?
There are two schools of thought amongst us. Well, there's some minor schools of thought, but the two prevalent schools of thought are the R1, which is our licensed manufactured version of the FN Fell, and then the R4, which is our licensed manufactured version of the Israeli Galil. They've served us well, and nowadays they're extremely expensive. It's very easy for our members, or much cheaper for our members, to buy AK-47s and AK-74s, you know, for one-third the price. But people prefer either the 7.62 Fell, the R1, or the 5.56 Galil,
sure,
what we call an R4.
Sure. Okay, that's pretty much what I suspected there. So okay, now let's look at the current political situation there. I know last year when we spoke to you and when you were here on your speaking tour, we got a chance to talk to you and meet with you. There was a looming date. It was this last August when they were moving forward with, I don't know if it was a referendum or a law that would be implemented, but that was when that they would begin seizing land, specifically based on race, based on being white. Now, of course, that's come and gone. So can you kind of give us a status report as far as how things have gone?
Yes, the draft laws were riddled with errors. Not exactly spelling errors, but fundamentally they were very poorly drafted. So they were sent back, and they have now been come up for a motion was brought before the parliament to proceed with it. And that motion was adopted on Tuesday, the 27th of February, if I remember correctly. So as of a few weeks ago, that is now going to be pursued. We have a certain system that requires certain drafts of laws and what we call green papers and white papers and committee findings and so on. So the next step cannot take place before the 13th of August. That's just the way it is. It can't be expedited. So the phase two will occur after the 13th of August, and then phase three and phase four. But over the next year, it does seem as if that law will be implemented, and it's called land expropriation without compensation. And it is naturally mostly directed at whites. And I'd like to point something out to your listeners. There may be some people among your listeners who are half well-informed, who've read about this matter or heard about it in mainstream media, and they will have heard that whites, who are 8.5% of the population, own 90% of the land. Let me tell you that that is a fiction. It's fundamentally a fiction. It's not true. It's false. It's a liberal slander. There are audits, formal government audits, and audits by other entities, other organizations, which prove beyond any dispute, mathematically, that the land ownership in South Africa by black people varies from province to province, bearing in mind that some of our provinces historically had never been occupied by Bantu black people. What you would think of as a black person had never occupied portions of South Africa. So to this day, some of those provinces don't have many black people in it. So the proportion of land owned varies from 22% to 49% to 50% to 60%. Just to give a sense of perspective on this particular matter.
That's good to know. That's really good to know. Because that's exactly what we're hearing. We're hearing that, you know, that the whites own 90% of the land there, or you know, 80 to 90% of the land. So it's unfair. So this is the only fair thing to do. You know, so let me also address. I'm trying to deal with some of the feedback here with this with the application that we're using. But now there are several in the listening audience who have friends that are missionaries or personal friends that they have living in South Africa, and they're asking. They're beginning to talk to these folks and saying, you know, are you okay where you are? So, for example, there was, and just also for the listening audience, I've gotten several folks ask me to put me in touch with Simon. You know, hey, can I have his email address? I want to get in touch with him. That's not tenable to be able to direct all those the emails again to Simon, because he's already getting hundreds that he can't respond to. There is a proper process for getting involved in Sightlanders for those who are concerned, who are living in South Africa. Can you speak to that?
Yes, certainly. They can contact us via hk@sightlanders.co.za. hk@sightlanders.co.za. And then there's a sort of a committee of people, of very, very good ladies, who will take care of any requests for information and so on. Alternatively, relations@sightlanders.co.za, that is to say ZA, what we call Z, you call Z.
Yep.
relations@sightlanders.co.za or hk@sightlanders.co.za.
Okay, outstanding. Thank you very much. Now, can you also text me those emails so I have the proper spelling afterward, and we'll add that to our highlights and resources posting?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, that would be great. Just because you know, there is a little bit of breaking up, I want to make sure I'm not missing any of the spelling. Okay, so one particular example, a close friend has a friend in South Africa. She lives in a urban area, I think New London, I believe. And she was saying, do you feel safe there?
East London?
Okay.
East London?
Okay, yes. That's
East,
what...
East London.
Okay, East
yes,
London.
Yes.
Okay, so she asked her,
yes.
She says...
Sorry, there's a little delay.
Pardon me?
I was just going to say there's a little delay on the line. I didn't mean to be so emphatic. I think I said it about five times before you heard the first one.
Oh, okay. Not a problem. Okay, so when asked, do you feel safe? She says, yeah, we don't have a – I don't feel like we're in danger. She says it's you know, it's the farmers that we're concerned about. Do you, in your estimation, once things begin to really decay – do you think that it's only the farmers that are at risk here, or should those in the cities also be concerned? Rural versus urban.
John Jacob, it's important for people to recognize that this is a relative thing. I think I've spoken to you before about the fact that it is about 13,700% more likely that a white person will be murdered in South Africa than that any American will ever be murdered. So that is mainly not farmers. The point being that this lady probably feels safe, that's fair enough, but we are jaded in South Africa. We may feel safe. I've not felt I'm in terribly much danger most of my adult life, but I have to recognize that it's 13,700% more likely that I'm going to be murdered than that you are going to be murdered. So even in the suburbs, our rates of murder and rape are massively high. I think I might have told you the story about the woman who was raped by four men and then was killed by rape with a broomstick on the sports fields of Elon Musk. Elon Musk's high school, which is in the middle of Johannesburg. There's a story about a woman who was severely raped in the sense that she almost died by 11 men in just outside the center of Johannesburg in a suburb called Yeovil. And the stories go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. There's a famous case at the moment of a woman who was abducted not far from East London. So it's important that people appreciate that mathematically it's possible for me to feel safe right now, but my degree of safety and your degree of safety, John Jacob, are absolutely incomparable. It's like trying to compare cheese with chalk. They look vaguely the same, but they are not at all. We know that this is a low-intensity conflict, and it will scale up, whether it be on the farms or in the suburbs. It will become more dangerous in the suburbs. We've just recently had land invasions in Pretoria and Johannesburg the Monday and Tuesday before last. Very large-scale land invasions of suburban property, not of farms. In other words, people taking over private property, just arriving, 100 people take over and tell the owner to, you know, go. This is not yours anymore. I hope that that's an acceptable answer to your question.
Yeah,
best way that I can answer you.
And they're encouraged to do that by folks in government, official government positions.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Okay, so very difficult situation. So right now, give us an update as far as what the international community is doing in response. Have they even acknowledged your plight? Have they indicated intervening at all from the UN or any other body made up of international help? Can you describe that or give us an update?
John Jacob, the tour that we did in the USA last year, the 6 months that we spent in the USA, has been a great blessing on our heads. So much so that a South African journalist, told me the other day, that is to say last week Thursday, that he has been researching. He writes for a quasi-socialist newspaper called The Mail and Guardian, which is associated with the Manchester Guardian of England, the very, very famous socialist newspaper, The Manchester Guardian. And he said to me, the more I have looked into this matter of why we are getting attention at the moment, it all goes back to your tour of the USA. So I can tell you without flattery or without, you know, trying to say nice things about beautiful Americans or whatever, the simple fact of the matter is, the truth is, that the support that we received in the USA, which was not financially what we had hoped to receive, but the attention, the kindness, the generosity, the love, the compassion spread through the internet like a wildfire. And it obliged people to start taking attention, so much so that the minister of...
Did I lose you again?
Hello, John Jacob.
Ah, there we are. Good. I'm glad I got you back this time.
Yeah, I'm very sorry, but there's a storm raging overhead, and so the international connection is just pretty poor, I think.
Okay. So we were talking about international support from the United States, very supportive. How about the United Nations? What are they saying?
Nothing whatsoever. The only reason we have support is because of the conservative Christians of the USA. And the United Nations is far too politically correct, and they're not interested in Christians think. As far as they're concerned, we are the new South African rainbow nation utopia, and we are heading down that liberal path that the United Nations has paved for the world over the past 100 years since the League of Nations. We are really struggling, but thank God for conservative Christians around the world. In Australia, they're now inviting white South African farmers to to emigrate. The Belgian Parliament just debated this matter a couple of days ago, yesterday, in fact. The European Parliament has had the matter brought up on a number of occasions, thanks ultimately to our tour of the USA and the social media effect that the conservatives in the USA had. You know, we are now getting invitations from all over the world. And in fact, we've started a Free Starter campaign, which you probably know is the conservative man's option to all the other liberal options of crowdfunding. Charles C. Johnson, the head of Free Starter, has started a campaign for us to raise funds for dieseline because it's the most important aspect of preparations for large groups of people. I'm not talking about, you know, small groups of people who place an emphasis on water filters or medicine or arms and ammunition. If you have tens of thousands of people, you firstly need to be able to pump water and purify it, and you need to be able to harvest grain and to mill it, and then to distribute it. That requires diesel fuel.
Yes.
And so we have a Kickstarter campaign in which we're raising funds for that. And that, again, is the international community helping us. And we're pleading with people, please, if you can give 5 cents, 50 cents, $5, whatever you can, please help us. We need it. We are in a crisis situation here now where, as I told you earlier, our Minister of Defense has said if there are any more peaceful protests by white people against rape and murder, there is going to be a genocide in this country. And John Jacob, I don't want to speak too long-windedly of keeping things brief in this interview, of perhaps 12 threats.
Okay.
Kenya, are going to wipe us out. We are on the cusp of a civil war.
Yes. Yeah, we see that. We see that. We know that there's – I'm looking at your website at sidelanders.org, SUIDLANDERS.org. I see two ways of paying. You accept Bitcoin and you accept PayPal. So what is the crowdfunding? How can we find that crowdfunding?
If you just do a Google search, I can't remember out of my head the www part, but if you do a Google search against Free Starter, that's F-R-E-E, free, and then Starter minus the E on the end, S-T-A-R-T-R. If you search that, that's a U.S.-based crowdfunding organization, a conservative Christian organization. I know the owner. I know some of his staff quite well. They are decent, conservative, old-fashioned, patriotic Americans, if that term is acceptable to you. They're good people, and they are helping us to raise funds.
Okay, Free I've got Starter. It. I've got it. It's Free Starter without an E on the end. It's the S-T-A-R-T-R. And it is Sightlanders. You have your own page right here. projects/projects/Sightlanders Humanitarian Aid Civil Defense Fund. We will post this in the highlights and resources posting as well and get this out there so that we can help create awareness. Here's the video that you just did last month that we've also reposted on Radio Free Redoubt. And we'll get that out to folks so they can help you. We do understand fuel, especially as we have a now international emergency communications network called AMRON, which you're familiar with, that fuel is a huge deal. Whenever we deploy, it's sanitation, food, and fuel. And of course, sleeping arrangements. But all of those are really easy to overcome, except fuel. we do understand the importance of that. Now, let's talk about the communications really quickly. You've got how involved, because we have operators. If this thing develops into a civil war type situation, we do have operators. An entire network that would be able to be standing by in case you needed to get situation reports out about what's happening when the rest of the world is in the dark, in the information darkness. If you needed to call out for help, you needed a lifeline to say, this is where we are, we're surrounded, we need help. What can you say about your communications on a local tactical level? I mean, I don't mean tactics as in combat. I mean, you know, just the inner workings of a small group communicating with each other, all the way up to the strategic level. What can you, how much can you say about your communications network?
Yeah. Well, we encourage all of our members to buy a VHF radio, and we have a number of repeaters up around South Africa. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's a very important thing that our members should have a VHF radio. And then to some extent, we recommend UHF radios for, you know, their particular application. You would know better than anybody what I'm talking about in close-knit groups and line of sight circumstances. And then we have an HF capacity, which is not very highly developed. We are working hard on it now. Our next Freestarter campaign, Charles C. Johnson, the owner of Freestarter, has said that he would like to do a follow-up campaign immediately after the diesel campaign. And we have said to him that we would like that to be a radio, you know, to raise funds specifically for radios. And that would be on for HF and VHF radios. we have worked very hard at it for many years, but it's a thing that's difficult to do when you are as persona non grata as we are in the new South African Rainbow Nation. You know, when you're the one organization that's standing up and saying, hey guys, you know, my first child is not pure white. This is not about hating black people, but I have fissures in my skull from being attacked. I have a big gash in my back from being stabbed. I have a gash in the front of my face from being hit by an axe, all in separate incidents. My father was put on his knees to be assassinated, and twice the gun misfired as he was praying to his God to save him. And then the guys ran away. The mother of my kids has twice had her house plundered from top to bottom, absolutely everything taken. And she has twice been attacked on her way to work. The simple reality is this, that we are, as white people, embattled, whether we like it or not. We could be green, pink, yellow, it doesn't matter. And when you say that in the new South African Rainbow Nation milieu or paradigm, you just don't get any traction. We are all meant to be liberal. We are all meant to forsake the old-fashioned traditional core values of our people. And therefore, it's difficult to raise funds. It's difficult to get traction. So as I say, we have worked on this radio solution for years and years, but we're a long way from finished. And the next campaign will be to improve our VHF capacity and, to some extent, our HF capacity.
Well, that's the world over. They want you to, it's not about liberalism, it's about communism and statism, globalism, and they want you to abandon your heritage and your core traditional values and embrace global communism. Really, that's what it comes down to. Yeah. So, yeah, I hear you. And so I'll talk to you more about the communications offline here when we're done. Of course, that's what we do. But I was very encouraged to see. Now, when you say VHF, you're talking amateur radio?
Yes and no. I mean, some frequencies don't require licenses. Others do.
Right.
I'm talking 2 meter band, what we would call 2 meter band. And I'm speaking, by the way, as somebody who is not a radio person.
Right.
I'm the worst qualified person to speak on this subject.
Right. Understood. Okay. So basically, you know enough to know that your HF capabilities or your long range over the horizon capabilities are lacking and you need help there. So
that's correct.
Okay, and that will be another, not crowdfunding, I don't want to call it that, but a Freestarter campaign after the fuel. What is your goal? Oh, your goal is 100,000. You are a little over a third of the way there. And are you going to wait on your communications until you've reached your fuel goal, or are you going to try to bring both of those up simultaneously to have both of those going at the same time?
We decided to wait and not run them in tandem or in parallel because it kind of dilutes things a little bit. We've been very fortunate with this $100,000. We've raised about $38,000 in a relatively good period of time. According to Freestarter, it has performed well, and we still have about another 2 months to go in it. So we're not overly concerned. We don't feel the need to do everything at once. We're going to finish it, and then we're going to move on to the next campaign. Of course, if people donate money to our PayPal right now instead of the Freestarter, then we are deploying that money to various purposes, including radios. But as I say, in 2 months' time, we will then focus entirely on radios.
Right, right. Okay, and then finally, before you go, because this is really good stuff. Matter of fact, let's go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, I want to wrap up by asking you a few other things, and then we'll let you get going, because I know what you're doing is very busy, or you're very busy, and what you're doing is very important, and we want you to get back to the task. So if you'd stay around with us, this is Radio Free Redoubt. We're with Simon Roach from Sightlanders in South Africa. And we will continue this when we come back. Don't go away. Okay, this is the final segment here, and we will be in touch with Simon Roach to get updates, and look forward to bringing him on over the coming weeks and months to keep everyone posted. This is kind of a special segment or a special episode where we're spending time with him at length, because we were able to right now. We won't always be able to, but we'll just bring small updates whenever we can. So if you're just joining us, we're with Simon Roach from Sightlanders in South Africa using a secure encrypted application. He is very remote right now. They're working on the final, I guess, for lack of a better term, bug out locations and securing logistics and everything involved with that. Simon, really good to have you with us. We were just talking about radio communications. We'll move off of that. Is there anything else that you wanted to, is there any lessons or anything you could pass on to the folks that you've learned as far as communications go?
Well, obviously, the key thing to note is that how vital they are. You know, if you as a prepper believe that, let's say, for argument's sake, a Sawyer Mini water filter, those beautiful water filters, if you think that's the most important thing for you, you may be right. But if you think that's the most important, and then, let's say, arms and ammunition, and then this item, and then the other, and then the other, and you're at item number five, and you haven't covered radio communication, you're making a mistake. Somewhere up there amongst your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top items must be radio communication. That's just a reality. Most people who are not radio boffins, for want of a better word, might not appreciate the importance of radio communications. As somebody who was in our wars, our bush wars, border wars, Angolan war, said to me the other day, if you ever meet a soldier who says, if you ask him the question, what is the last thing you throw away? And if this guy does not answer radio, if he gives you another answer, then you know that he was never really an operational infantry combat soldier in a real war. Because the last thing you throw away is always and only your radio.
Yeah.
If you have to throw everything away but one, of course you'd like to keep your rifle or whatever the case may be, but if you can only keep one thing, it has to be your radio. So it's vital. And I'd like to mention also, John Jacob, that when Andre and I met you in southeastern Washington State last year, you spoke about helping us and about AMRON and various other things. And it wasn't really the right time for us to take advantage of your offer. There was a lot on the plate. You know, the harvest is great, but the workers are few. And we have so much to concentrate on. But when I got back to South Africa, I mentioned to our leader many different things. This one offered that. This chappy offered the other. This guy is willing to help us with IT and with storage of documents and encrypted files and so on. And I mentioned to him the offer from you because it was one of the strategically very valuable offers that we received in the USA. So, you know, that I just wanted to pass that comment.
And what did he? And that was his response that was something that they want to look into.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have over 500 unopened emails, not unanswered. I mean, I've got maybe 600 unanswered emails, and yet I have to do other things. For example, I've just, as you know, I've just gone up to the top of some mountainous range to identify safe havens for civilian non-combatants. The reality is there's too much work and too few people to do it. The point being that we recognize the value, we just haven't been at the right point in time to take it up. But over the past 2 weeks, our kind of telescopic sights have shifted very much onto radios by coincidence. It's coincidental that it's happening now that I'm doing an interview with you with your radio background and the Amron thing and what have you, purely coincidental. But it has taken us time to reach that point where we can say, all right, in spite of all of the things on our computers and all of the other priorities, now we must focus on radios.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, you and I will definitely talk about that offline. I know that we had discussed some things, last year. I would call it not coincidence, but providence that we're talking about this. And then also, by the grace of God, that you've got borrowed time, that there were issues with the legalities of the law for reclaiming land without compensation. There were some technical issues with that pushed that back. We've all been granted, we feel like in America, we've been granted borrowed time. It sounds like you've been granted borrowed time. We want to make good use of that while we're able to. So that's really, really good stuff. Okay, and now let's talk about the bug out plan. That's the last thing I want to talk about here before we let you go, and that is identifying a remote, secure location for non-combatants to retreat to. Well, the first thing that came to mind for me was ISIS in Iraq, who were pursuing the Christians and the Kurds, and they had them backed up into mountains with a defensive perimeter set up. Of course, in their case, the only thing that ultimately saved them was they were able to call on Allied airstrikes to come in and attack ISIS from the air. That was we may never know, but it's strongly suspected without that, all of those people would have been completely annihilated. But they had retreated to defensible locations on mountains and in mountains and mountain passes. So how much can you say about what you're doing right now? Not precisely, but where you are in terms of topography, geography, and the things that you've considered, the things that you've taken into consideration for this redoubt, essentially, that you're creating.
Yes. Yeah, redoubt is a very good word. We have endeavored to identify a region which is sparsely populated, a semi-desert region, and we have identified a ring around it of mountains. So it has kind of castle walls, if you like. And we have a plan A, B, C, and D. And at least two of those versions are known to very, 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 very few people, as in one or two, literally. Meaning that we don't go into details of our plan A, but if people participate in our plan A, they will be in position to adapt with our plans to B, C, or D. And the parapet or the castle wall, the legal under international law cordon around our safe area, around our redoubt, is fortunately fairly convenient for many people in cities and towns. Not everybody. It's not really close to all of our big cities and towns, so it's not going to be equally easy for all of our members or for all of our people to get to these locations. But for much of this, the perimeter or the extent of this castle wall, it is located fairly close to the best escape routes in the event of a sudden conflict.
Okay. such as what we saw in Rwanda, for example, or Kosovo.
Yeah. It's vital that our people be able to come together to create critical mass. You can't defend anything as one man, no matter if you're Chuck Norris. But as 10 men, mediocre, average men, you can feasibly defend yourself against 100 if you have a well-prepared location.
Right.
And you're fairly competent and you have the necessary skills and experience, which, because of our history, our people tend to have.
Yeah. And is that in South Africa, or fleeing to neighboring areas, has that made its way into any of your plans? Or can you speak to that?
I'd rather not say, if you don't mind.
Okay, not a problem. We understand OPSEC. There's a lot of stuff that we'll put up as follow-up. This is going to be several postings. And pardon me, I had to mute you because I keep getting feedback. I'm feedback coming back to myself here. So I'll unmute you here in just a moment. But I do look forward to following up with you in the coming weeks and beyond. If you want any updates, anything breaking, please let us know. You know how to get a hold of me, and we'll put this information out there. So one more time, if you could get your contact information out there for everyone, where they can go, what your needs are, exactly how to contact you to either join or support, and of course your website, if you would. Go ahead. Okay, it looks like we lost them for good there. Sorry about that, folks. Very difficult situation. They are in a remote location. We're very fortunate to have been able to get what we've been able to out of them, despite the difficult communication situation. So I will be talking to Simon more about that, about the emergency communications portion. So let me just guide you to their website one more time, and we'll post this in the highlights and resources posting. It's sightlanders.org. I spell Sierra Uniform India Delta Lima Alpha November Delta Echo Romeo Sierra.org. Sightlanders.org. It looks like Suid Landers, Suid Landers.org. And also, when you go there, their general financial support is PayPal and Bitcoin. Both of the links are right there on their website. On the main page, just scroll down to the bottom. And then also, fuel, critically important. Just like Simon said, they're up to $39,000 right now, $39,000 raised. Their goal is $100,000. This is specifically for fuel. And that is at freestarter.com. We'll put the highlight, the link in there. Don't use Google. Use DuckDuckGo, because DuckDuckGo does not track your searches and your IP. Of course, you should always be using a VPN, a virtual private network, an encrypted VPN anytime you're surfing the net for all of your activities. But if you don't have a VPN, then at least use DuckDuckGo. It does use Google searches, but it doesn't, but it obscures your IP and it hides your, it doesn't track your search history. DuckDuckGo, that's the way to go. And there's others, you know, there's Start. I'll think of it. Okay, so Freestarter, FreeStarter. It's starter without a E. And that's .com/project/Sightlanders. If you just do a DuckDuckGo search and just type in Freestarter, Sightlanders, humanitarian, You'll find it. That'll be right toward the top of your search there. And Freestarter is without an E at the end. It's S-T-A-R-T-R. So with that, you guys have a blessed week. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you for your prayers and your encouragement. Don't forget to lift up the folks in South Africa in your prayers as well. And in fact, persecuted Christians everywhere. We also are strong supporters of Voices of the Martyrs and the Underground Persecuted Church everywhere. Today, we're just featuring Sightlanders, who are facing an imminent civil war and open, overt threats against their people. So remember to lift them up in your prayers. You can also support them materially as well. We've given you all the information to do that. Okay, have a blessed week. I'm John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. From the American Redoubt, good night.